Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. If you're new to integrative medicine, listen on to find out more. And if you're someone with cancer, this could be the start of a journey to accessing a goldmine of great resources to help you to deal with your situation. My guest on this week's show is Fiona Murphy. Fiona has developed a raft of resources for helping with the often extremely challenging side effects of conventional cancer treatments, which I'm wanting to find out more about. Hi, Fiona. Welcome to the Yes Life Show.
Thank you so much. I'm really privileged to be here and speaking with you in person.
Lovely. Well, it's a real pleasure to have you as my guest. I'm very much looking forward to hearing more about your work as an oncology skincare specialist, as it's a topic that I can't say we've really ever covered on the show in over 10 years, but this is the time to put that right.
I'm very happy.
Great. So the word skincare conjures up pictures of elegant women with slices of fruit over their eyes and towels on their heads being pampered, i.e. very much a nice-to-have sort of therapy, but I suspect that oncology skincare is quite a different story and a type of care that you might describe as well beyond nice-to-have. What is oncology skincare and why is it important?
So your concept is something that I've been challenging for the last 12 years.
Okay.
That I've been doing this. But what I think people forget, and it's a re-education for people, we know when we look on TV and magazines, skincare is very aesthetic. What we forget is that our skin is our largest organ. It protects us against viruses, germs, disease. It regulates our temperature. It even affects how we walk if we've got neuropathy and we have skin conditions. So we need to look at it from a definitely a more clinical perspective rather than just aesthetic. Although aesthetic isn't necessarily a bad thing. We choose how we look from the inside of us. And when the outside changes, we can't necessarily resonate with that. And we look in the mirror and we're like, who is that looking back at me? That's one aspect of it. The second aspect is that literally 75 to 85% of patients will suffer from some sort of dermatological toxicity due to cancer treatment.
That's not right.
Huge.
I never knew that it was that many, yeah.
It's huge.
Right.
And I started this from my own experience of ovarian cancer. I was diagnosed at 25. And I was given a 5-year prognosis. I'm now 41, so I'm past that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still very much having continued follow-ups with different varieties because I think I've got something genetic. But when I got into this, I was already in skin health. So I used to deal with rosacea, psoriasis, pigmentation. That was my background. So skin wasn't particularly new to me.
Okay.
But skin toxicities from cancer treatment was. So when I looked it up, usually you put in Google, when you get all of this information, there was nothing. And I thought, I'm probably not going to train and be a top oncologist.
Right.
But what can I do within my own remit? So I started to research and that's the basis of what I do. What I soon realized is different chemotherapies, immunotherapies, hormonal blockers all work differently on the skin and they cause different toxicities. Yet there was a one station protocol for this.
Right. Yeah. What's that out of interest? What does the mainstream medicine think you do about skin problems?
So what they think I do or what they did do, more to the point, is keep hydrated and your skin's going to become dry and a bit itchy. That was pretty much the remit then. Now we know, or I know, I go into each specific drug. So I spend most of my life researching. So certain drugs, which are really common in cancers, is a taxane or a taxol. which is for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate, colorectal cancer.
All the big ones.
All the big ones that people know about is really common. But what we do know with those is that it causes photosensitivity. But why does it cause photosensitivity? It causes photosensitivity because it interferes with the mechanism of our melanin, which is what turns our skin brown to protect itself from UV rays. When that is disruptive, we end up with nail disruption, nail loss, red skin, peeling skin, burning skin. So can we do something to try and prevent that? Absolutely we can. And it's by going into these individual drugs that you can look at certain patterns and actually try and help prevent at least or minimize these toxicities on the skin, which is what my role is.
Amazing. All right. So it sort of sounds like you invented this field. Is that true? I mean, did you get somebody to train you? Did you do all the research yourself and invent what a skin specialist in oncology does?
I did some training for oncology skincare, which allowed me to treat cancer patients.
Right.
The research is all mine. And this year, actually, in October, the Complementary Medical Association awarded me an award in research in holistic oncology.
Right.
For the work that I've done.
Great. So yeah, basically, you just got yourself a qualification to allow you to work with patients. But once there, you've actually kind of invented the whole arena.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Can we nip back to you and your treatment for a minute? I'd just like to hear, I mean, obviously you're well past your sell-by date. You're looking amazingly healthy. And well, you know, what happened? How did you achieve that?
So I was diagnosed with a very rare form of ovarian cancer, mucinous ovarian cancer. I had symptoms for 2 years previous, and they thought I had IBS because of my age range. And it only was when I presented with, I looked like I was pregnant, because mucinous is, it looks like a bunch of grapes as a cyst.
Right.
And it grows and it can grow quite big. And I got sent for a scan from the GP, and they sent me straight to A&E.
Right.
And they still at this point were thinking it was benign. My CA125, which is your ovarian cancer, what they can use for a marker, came back normal. And I had a 6.5 hour surgery. I lost my right ovary and my fallopian tube, and they removed a 9.5 pound cyst.
Wow.
It drained 4.5 litres of fluid.
Ew.
And I was in my 20s, so I was probably smaller than what I am now. So I did have quite a bump. And I was in hospital for about a week. And then they said, we'll see you in 6 weeks. Within days, I was called back in. And you know, the NHS is amazing, but they're not necessarily quick.
Good for that.
So when you get that, you kind of know that there's something serious. And I was told I had ovarian cancer and I was going to be transferred to the hospital that I'm still under today. Now, I have to say the consultant that I was with was like my dad. I was the same age as his daughter.
Right.
I've had incredible care, and he was drawing me pictures and explaining things. And I couldn't believe I've now just entered this world. To put it in perspective, I wasn't old enough for a smear test.
All right.
But I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Yeah, well, the whole story is of a cancer diagnosis is moving younger and younger relentlessly at the moment.
Yeah, I'm under Queen Charlotte in Chelsea. So they're a centre of excellence in ovarian cancer, and they have an ovarian cancer research centre, which my tumour is used in their research, because I agreed to that. And I have subsequently had 9 surgeries, and I am so blessed for their care, and they have been incredible. And it made me want to do something within oncology. Not for the first 5 years, because I was told that I had 5 years.
Right.
So I didn't. For the first 5 years, I was kind of on countdown. So when I reached 30 and I was still here, I was like, right, I need to do something.
What next?
I was like, pretty much. I was like, okay, I'm still here. Let's do something. Yeah. So I started working with the ovarian cancer charities, and I started a blog on Facebook, which is when Sparkle Through Chemo was born.
So this is your own business, yeah?
This was my entrance into oncology skin health, which has evolved so much from where I started.
Okay.
And I'm proud, because it started with a really small concept, and actually the impact has actually been greater. I'm now in a position where I get referrals straight from medical oncologists.
Excellent.
And they are so happy to have someone to be like, you deal with that.
Yeah.
You help with that, because we don't know this part. And that's not a fault. Their focus is cancer and treatment. They need a supportive MDT team to make this work for cancer patients. And that's where we come in. So I started with, like I said, a blog on Facebook. And the names of what I have been called over the years has also changed, Robin.
What, your title or the rude names?
The rude names. So it started as Chemo Beauty.
Okay.
That's what I started as. Yeah. And actually, it was a place where I felt comfortable with where I was at the time. I have gone on to do my postgraduate in skin science and in oncology skin health. So as I've progressed, so has my training and qualifications. So it started as that. And then it was oncology aesthetics, because they have a program like this in America.
Okay.
And in Canada. So they were where I was kind of looking to get some guidance from.
Yeah.
It's not like complementary therapy where we have a pyramid scheme in hospitals. This was the unknown. So oncology aesthetics is where I was for a few years, but everyone thought that just meant I did Botox during treatment.
Yep, I imagine.
So that stayed for a few years. And then I went into oncology skincare. And that really took off. And my personal clinic did really well. And I was getting medical referrals from oncologists, surgeons, and CNSs. When I started working in a hospital, oncology skincare does not resonate with men.
No.
And that actually was apparent quite quickly.
Yeah.
Once I changed the word from skincare to skin health, that completely changed the dynamic.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's right. I mean, skincare is a thing that's mainly thought of as a women's domain.
Yeah.
And not so much as it used to be, but still in the main there. So, yeah, it makes complete sense. You've got to get the words right if you want to get the customers.
You want to help as many people as you can. And the amount of men that go through treatment, and this is slightly off topic, but something that I'm really passionate about, is that I don't think men get the support and help that they need generally.
It's not off topic for this show. It's something I like to talk about as often as possible, because, yeah, the whole societal conditioning that means that men don't get the care they need.
They don't.
Is horrendous.
If I could say how many people go, they speak about women in their hair loss, which is really traumatic, but they don't speak of how traumatic it is for men to lose their facial hair and how that impacts them on a masculine level. No one talks about that. No. Women can go and speak to other women about these things. Who do men go and speak to?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm right with you.
So it's an area that I'm very interested in, very wanting to expand. And actually, my first patient in oncology skin health was a man.
All right. There you go.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Really interesting how these things happen, isn't it? There are you, already a skin specialist. You get cancer and these two things come together and here you are now pioneering a new field, effectively. So it's great. It's marvellous. And, you know, so much of the whole arena of integrative medicine is populated by people with personal experience, either first or second hand, of cancer, who actually know what people need when they're diagnosed with cancer and therefore are able to supply it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And there is so much more now, as you know, evidence-based practices and, you know, for example, PubMed and its phone catering in America, and I follow them quite a lot, that they looked at nail detachment within taxane as a group of chemotherapy. And that's something probably my number one that I deal with in the work that I do, because it is used in so many different cancers. And I'm talking about men and women. Mm. And they've done studies where they show that a opaque nail polish, so that's something that is not sheer, has an SPF 500.
Right, thus keeping the sun out and therefore limiting the damage.
Absolutely. Right. And I personally use breathable nail polishes, toxin-free nail polishes, vegan. So anyone who's worried about chemicals, I've managed to admit that. And I've looked in and I've studied and I've gone through their safety data sheets to make sure that actually fits my criteria.
Yeah.
And actually, I know there's no studies with this, but it would be interesting to see how it would compare using both with polybalm.
Yes, now polybalm, I was going to mention that so that our listeners know what we're talking about. This is an invention of Professor Robert Thomas's, who's done all sorts of great work in getting products together to meet specific issues. And this one, the big nail problem that a lot of people suffer from.
Huge.
Rather a brilliant piece of work. So do you want to tell us about polybalm, what it is and how you use it?
So polybalm is a mixture of fatty acids and omegas, which your nails are not able to produce when you're immunosuppressed. So it helps to keep the nail strong. It helps to put what you can't get nutritionally back into the nails. Right. And it does seem to have really good outcomes with it. If you combine it, which I have, with the photosensitivity part,
right.
So notice that I'm saying breathable nail polish.
Yes.
That's really key. So that means that the polybalm can actually go through. It's not sat on the top. So when you combine the both of them, you actually get much better results. And I don't know if he knows that or not, but I've been doing this for quite a while with polybalm and nail polishes, and actually the results are better than if you use one or the other.
How about that? Well, I'm going to be interviewing him after Christmas, so I'll tell him.
It'll be really interesting. I mean, everything that I do is evidence-based. I have followed it with the nail polishes. And just on a different note, years ago, patients were told to use a black nail polish.
Yeah.
So if you walk up and down, I'm going to say Harley Street, that's near where I work, as soon as you see black nail polish, you kind of know that person's on treatment. And something that you might not know, Robin, but I'm just going to go there anyway.
Okay.
2000, Chanel launched black nail polish and it was the range. Everyone wanted it. That's not actually so much now. Right. And nail polish is part of our identity. So if you're wearing something that's not really your identity, it feels odd. So being able to have a full range of colours that might suit you is also very beneficial for you. And this is where oncology skin health is multi-layered. So, for example, having these therapies that I offer or doing these treatments allows your nervous system to try and relax, to try and get into some equilibrium. I had a call with a patient not so long ago and I was explaining, as soon as you see the call with a withheld number, you spike, you start going, oh God, what now?
Yeah, right.
And actually having these treatments allow you to just let your nervous system rest. That increases your immune system. It stops you from getting so much anxiety and it just allows you just your body to just rest for that hour, 90 minutes, or if it's home care advice, 15, 20 minutes. So you're benefiting your sleep, your fatigue.
Very important stuff. Yeah, again, something we speak about a lot is the kind of the stress aspect of cancer is just unthinkable, really. I mean,
yeah,
you know, quite likely people have had a stressed life and that's been one of the contributory factors to them getting cancer in the first place. But actually, once you've been diagnosed, it all ramps up hugely, absolutely massively with the existential threat that cancer represents. It's massive. And people, yeah, they definitely need strategies for coping with that and to find some peace in amongst it all, because otherwise you're just not even in a good position to find your way forward, to decide how to act and all the rest of it in order to for the best outcome. So, yeah, hugely important, I think. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And to know that each cancer protocol, depending on the drug, has their own. So no one ever gets the same protocol from me.
Right.
And that's different. So I'm going to take background information. I'm going to take their stress information. I'm going to take what do they actually use on their skin? And then they get a bespoke plan for themselves. No one's is ever the same. I never do the same treatment, even if they've got the same cancer, the same protocol of chemotherapy, immunotherapy. Everyone's looks very different.
Yeah, that's the, I say, that's kind of the thing that integrative cancer care understands, that, you know, it's based on that individuality. But of course, your system-based cancer care is like, well, you've got this kind of cancer, this is the protocol, regardless of whether it'll actually work or not in your case. And, you know, yeah, we need to move away from that, basically, and actually learn to treat cancer as a whole, as an individual disease.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're just not going to get, well, we're not getting very good results.
No.
So, yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit more about Sparkle Through Chemo? You mentioned it earlier on. What's it done over the years? What's it doing now?
So Sparkle Through Chemo is my baby.
Okay.
And it's my purpose from my own cancer journey. And it is a mixture between clinical skincare and also holisticness. So some of my patients are just practical. They just want the clinical stuff. They're not interested in the holistic side of it. Absolutely fine. I can do both. But something that I really do bring into it where I feel it's appropriate. So, for example, I also do scar work therapy. And scar work therapy for me is, again, multi-layered, because it's holding a trauma, especially if they've had a breast reconstruction.
Right.
Or they've had their, you know, reproductive systems removed, or at least, you know, different parts of their anatomy gone. It's a really emotional center. And when I was actually doing my training in this, this is when it flipped in my head. So I was doing a lady who had a DAP and it failed, breast construction. And she was talking to me. So I'm working on these scars. And she's then offloading a really emotional, traumatic experience. So I actually stopped because it wasn't appropriate for me to continue because she needed the space held. And as she was talking, I thought sound healing would be really good at this point. And I do sound healing. I've got quartz crystal bowls and I actually now combine them both together.
Right.
And so that the physicality I'm doing, so she's going to be able to move better. She's got better, you know, less restriction. She doesn't feel as tight, as uncomfortable, but the emotional side is also being dealt with as well. And this is what Sparkle Through Chemo is about. It's about combining the two of them. I also do a lot of work on neuropathy. I'm a clinical aromatherapist.
Okay.
So I help support symptoms with that with using acupressure. And again, all of this is evidence-based within my treatment plan. And it is about getting the best for the patients and minimizing their symptoms. My job, as I see it, is getting someone from A to B without minimizing or lowering a dose of their treatment. That's the main bit if they come to me prior. If they come to me mid-treatment with their nails hanging off, is to make someone feel like themselves and that they don't feel that the cancer is controlling them. Because by doing my therapies and their home care advice, they're actually taking some control back.
Absolutely. Yeah. Such a vital thing. I mean, being a victim of a treatment which has those kind of side effects, it's just like, well, you know, lie back and don't whinge too much and have this horrible treatment. You know, it's an unthinkable thing to be so powerless, really. So to have some resources to actually improve the situation is incredibly important.
And it's also supporting the consultants. I had a lady and she had really, really itchy skin. And it was driving her crazy. And when I assessed the skin, there was no rash, there was no erythema, there was no disruption to the acid mantle. And I always have asked permission, obviously. I always give a follow-up letter. And for practitioners out there that may not do this, I really recommend that you get the permission and you follow up with a clinical letter to their clinical teams. I just did that off my own back because I wanted to say actually what I do is important, what this patient needs is important.
Yes.
And off the back of that letter that I sent, it was a trigger. So she had a blood cancer. There was a few other things, but my letter that I sent saying that I had, you know, assessed her, I couldn't really see anything. It raised a red flag because it was a blood cancer. The treatment that she was on wasn't working.
Right.
But the key point of this was she didn't want to tell her oncologist something as meaningless as skincare.
Yeah. Well, that, there is that thing about not troubling your oncologist because, of course, they're highly under pressure and they don't even really have time to be interested in a lot of things. So, yeah, that definitely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health, and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You know, you've achieved something which is unusual, which is you kind of got yourself a place in the team to some extent with oncologists, where they've come to realize that you can help them. Now, I mean, that's true about you, but of course it's true about a whole raft of people. If oncologists realize there are people who could help their patients, yeah, not need to come back into hospital with an infection in between each round of chemo, well, that would just change their job, you know, completely. It would be a massive improvement, huge financial saving, and a great improvement in the experience of cancer patients to not have to go through endless intravenous antibiotics that destroy their gut bacteria, far more time spent in hospital where they don't want to be, all this stuff, you know. And of course, that's just one thing, you know, but there's so many resources out there in integrative oncology that could be helping oncologists to do their job easier, better, quicker, more effectively. You know, they get to the end of the treatment because the patient's supported properly and they don't have to slope off towards the end because they can't cope with any more. You know, all this kind of thing. It's all there waiting to be had. But, you know, the door's not open, though. But you managed to get your foot in the door there. So huge kudos to you for doing that.
Thank you. It's not been that easy. But, yeah, but I've been quite... For me, I don't just do this for me. From my diagnosis, I've lost 38 women that I've known to ovarian cancer. So they push me to do this. And it's something that drives me. And, you know, I have turned up to what some people, and I'm just being myself here, like the opening of an envelope just to see if I can push this somewhere.
Yeah.
And actually what I would say to people is I use MyCore, Measure Yourself and Wellbeing, which I use that. I collect data. And although I'm not by nature data person, I've realized to get into the medical world, I needed that.
Yeah. So that's as a self-reporting system, so people can report on the effectiveness of treatments like the ones you're using.
Yeah. Yeah. And things like that I've done to actually say, this is what I do and this is the effects and this can benefit your patients. I've personally found that oncologists, medical oncologists and surgeons are just so grateful that they can palm them off to someone who can help.
Yeah. I wish they just did a hell of a lot more. You know, that I think it's brilliant what they're doing with you, and there's so much more they could do. I mean, you know, it's not even happening with exercise, which is just like every single patient should be referred for exercise, and they're not being generally. I mean, some places I think have, you know, got the idea and it's happening, but in the main, it's still not happening in the UK, but the evidence is just overpowering.
It's huge.
That exercise is quite often better than anything they can do in the oncology department. And so there's no excuse for not telling people, and it would help their patients enormously. But in a lot of ways as well, not just the physical disease, but also their mental outlook and their general well-being, you know, hugely improved.
Absolutely. Exercise now should be something that's a given because there's so much evidence with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I know you've been tracking us for a number of years, coming along to Yes to Life conferences and
hiding in the background, Robin,
which is great. Really nice. Very nice. And so you've clearly got an abiding interest in integrative medicine as a whole. And I'm guessing that you've used quite a bit of it yourself to keep yourself well, way beyond your sell-by date.
Yes.
And this has been a very important part of your journey.
Absolutely.
Is that right? Yeah.
To find somewhere that is like I said at the beginning, I've spent thousands of pounds on things that just don't work and people taking advantage of vulnerability. So to provide what you do, I just bow down to you. I kneel down to you because you take something that is so difficult to find the right information and you bring it into something where it's easily found. And had I found this when I was 25, it would have been so different for me and I wouldn't have wasted thousands of pounds on ridiculous patches that say that they can't replicate cancer cells if you use them. And I did that. You know, I'm very honest about that. But when I was looking at what you do and I found you, I was like, my God, everyone needs to know about this.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, if you just go out there, I mean, I did it myself. That's why Yes to Life is here. I was doing research for my daughter to try and find out, well, what's a load of hogwash, what's for real? And it's so hard actually to do, isn't it? And so
it's not easy.
That's why we knew that patients need a reliable source of information, somewhere that's not trying to make any money out of them, got no reason to come up with anything other than to help them. So, that's the very reason we're here. So,
Well, I thank you very much from a patient point of view, putting my professional point of view aside. I'm very grateful to you. So thank you.
Right. Well, pleasure. Absolutely. So integrative medicine, you know, we've got conventional treatment. And I think, you know, it's legendary how harsh and difficult conventional approaches are.
Yeah.
Hugely toxic, many of them. And then on the other side, we've got integrative medicine, which, you know, largely provides medicine that's health promoting. It's not exclusively true, but that's pretty much the story. And these two things, it's like, well, there's no doubt about it. Conventional medicine is needed. Not like we can just dump it and say, no, we like these nice ones that are just health promoting. There are reasons for both things to exist. Different situations. And the thing that's becoming increasingly clear over the years, though, is that when you bring these two things together, the results are far better than either could achieve on their own. You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I know people who I feel have died because they were too conventional. I also know people who died because I thought they were too alternative. They needed some conventional medicine. They wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my opinion, of course. I don't know. I'm not an oncologist, but, you know, I've seen a lot of people go through a lot of things. And to me, it's quite clear that the people who have pragmatically decide what's the best thing for them, whether it's conventional or from the integrative world, they're the ones who do best. And the synergies that come out of using natural products with conventional medicine are extraordinary because the conventional medicine works better and there's less side effects and less damage and all the rest of it. So it's like win, win, win all the way.
100%. So,
anyway, do you want to say a bit about this bringing together of these two worlds, which are far too separate for far too long?
My personal opinion is that we should have the patient in the centre and what is most important to them. And that is how the plan for their care treatment should work. And that integrates both conventional medicine and integrative medicine. However, I do think we need, which is why I was so happy that the Royal Society of Medicine, because I've never seen them do anything with integrative oncology before.
Right.
And I've been a member for 6 years.
Okay.
So I felt like that was a huge stepping stone for bridging the gap.
So just for our listeners, so that was an event which you and I both attended earlier this year, which was at the Royal Society of Medicine, and it was for healthcare professionals. First time I'd been able to address healthcare professionals directly. So it was, it's a bit of a moment for me.
Huge.
An opportunity.
Yeah.
And it was a great thing. But on you go.
And that's where I think that healthcare needs to come together with that. What does the patient want? What's more important to them? How can we balance the mainstream medical side effects and support it with, maybe using mistletoe therapy, you know, which I really love. And that's a personal point of view. And I've researched that a lot. And the other side, like you said, exercise, these should be things that are just there for people to know. But there are time constrictions. And I'm well aware that I work in an independent hospital where things are more readily available than the NHS.
Right.
But I would just like to clarify, all of my treatment is NHS.
Mm-hmm.
From gynae to bowel to breast, everything I'm under is under the NHS. And I do think that bringing that whole together, so I had an appointment with my GP the other day, for example, and I mentioned a charity that I found that was very helpful to me. He added it onto his list. So if someone else came with the same thing, he was then able to do that. I think they're a little bit still stuck in a pyramid of medicalization where they're not really understanding that there is evidence with these intricate oncology and it is the way forward. It's kind of blindsided. And actually, that's where the multidisciplinary team comes in. So I was very aware that I needed to become a part of that. And I only knew that from a patient perspective.
Right.
If I'd have just come into this because I wanted to do oncology to skincare, I probably wouldn't know half the stuff that I knew.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's the great strength, really, of your position, which is like totally understanding the patient journey and, you know, what it's like to be a patient and how different it can look from there to, you know, being processed through a place where they need to deal with this tumour and remove that piece there. You know, whatever it is, it's a sort of job to be done. And there's the person that's there having it done to them is not really, well, it's secondary, you know. It's not really appreciated. And
no.
It's not appreciated. And
it's not.
You know, there's no appreciation of the fact that, you know, a large proportion of people with cancer suffer from PTSD. And that is, A, from being diagnosed with cancer, but B, it's going through hospital. It's such an impersonal journey. It's so, from the individual's point of view, the house is on fire, you know, and they're being just dealt with like, you know, yes, move along. We might be in touch with you in about 6 weeks to do, you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like the emergency it is to the person.
Yeah.
It is the biggest emergency they've ever had in their life. And nobody's acknowledging that fact either.
Yeah.
You know, they're not saying to you, blimey, this is, you know, it's a tough call. In a way, trying to walk around that.
I was given leaflets at 25 that were geared towards women 55 plus. It was a different language for what I was in.
Yeah.
Nothing resonated with me. I wasn't menopausal.
Mm.
I didn't have children. My career wasn't established. I should have been worrying about what I was wearing on Friday night.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And instead, I was put into this world with these leaflets that had nothing to do with me.
Hmm.
They really didn't. And I, just to add this in, I do work with the Research Centre of the Ovarian Cancer at Hammersmith.
Hello.
And they did something called clocks. And it's something, if you haven't seen, it's really worth looking into. And they're using loyalty cards.
Okay.
For earlier diagnosis with ovarian cancer. So if you'd have said to me, what was your plan and what were you going through? I lived on Gaviscon and I lived on Imodium, antacid, you name it. So ironically, if you put into Google Fiona Murphy Gaviscon, this face comes up. So they did this. Their research center, and they were able to diagnose women with ovarian cancer. And this is so rare with ovarian cancer.
Yeah.
Over 200 women, stage one or two, by following the loyalty cards, by thinking out of the box.
That is thinking out of the box. Amazing.
The CO125 does not cover all ovarian cancers, it only covers the most common ones, and it didn't cover
not
mine.
Yours.
No.
No. That's amazing because, yeah, that's the big number with ovarian cancer as not being diagnosed soon enough. So, amazing. All right. Well, good for them.
Sorry to go on.
No, it's excellent. I love it. Look, yeah, we are out of time. So I want to thank you very much, Fiona. It's been really great to hear about your work supporting people in all the ways you do and having this understanding of what people need. And it's kind of the lack of attention to these really toxic side effects that make conventional treatments really so unbearable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the side effects, that's what people dread. And of course, you have constant pain, constant itching, constant whatever it is, you know, that stuff drives you mad. It's so awful. And if you can actually anticipate that, know what's likely to come along, head it off at the pass so it doesn't happen at all, or at least
ameliorate it
so it's not so bad, without introducing any further toxicities, then, well, that's like magic, you know, that's just what people need. So
thank you.
Anyway, great to hear about it, and congratulations on kind of inventing this whole world so that people are getting this care.
Thank you, Robin.
You've done hugely important work that people, I'm sure, feel very grateful for. So great to talk to you. Thank you very much, Fiona.
Thank you so much, Robin. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lovely story of someone working with a passion to improve the lives of those with cancer and clearly making an impressive difference. Find out more about Fiona and her work on Facebook under Sparkle Through Chemo. If you're not aware of the Yes to Life Stockings of Hope Christmas campaign, do take a look. On offer are all sorts of free supportive resources for people with cancer to access over the Christmas holidays. You can access all of these at stockingsofhope.org. Thanks so much for listening today. Please join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.